Welcome to Power Play for April 27th, the day front-running Republican nominee Donald Trump delivered his impersonation of a presidential speech on foreign policy. We'll get a reaction from a veteran political watcher in Washington. Also coming up on today's show, the prison population of Aboriginal youth has exploded, and the government's watchdog is warning the penitentiaries are becoming the current generation's residential schools. The corrections investigator is just ahead. And pipeline mega projects are showing surprising signs of life on multiple fronts. We will talk to an industry spokesman who spent time with cabinet ministers yesterday to talk about progress getting pipelines underground. And the government's housing and mortgage agency says there are overheated housing prices and overbuilt housing supplies right across the country. The chief economist pinpoints the problem areas. But first, with the prime minister and his cabinet ministers scattered across the country after their retreat, political attention has turned south of the border, where seismic moves were happening in the U.S. presidential race. Declaring himself the presumptive nominee for the Republicans after last night's five-state primary sweep, Donald Trump abandoned freewheeling conversation for a scripted foreign policy speech. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
It's time to shake the rust off America's foreign policy. It's time to invite new voices and new visions into the fold, something we have to do. The direction I will outline today will also return us to a timeless principle. My foreign policy will always put the interests of the American people and American security above all else. Has to be first. Has to be. That will be the foundation of every single decision that I will make.
Well, meanwhile, his last serious rival, Ted Cruz, named former rival Carly Fiorina as his running mate should he win the nomination.
If we are to win, number one, win the nomination, but number two, even more importantly, win the general election, we must unite. And Carly is a vice presidential nominee who I believe is superbly skilled, superbly gifted at helping unite this party, bring us together so we stand united as one.
And Democrat frontrunner Hillary Clinton edged closer to mathematically clinching her nomination by winning all but one state over only rival Bernie Sanders.
With your help, we're going to come back to Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. With the most votes and the most pledged delegates. And we will unify our party to win this election and build an America where we can all rise together. An America where we lift each other up instead of tearing each other down.
Okay, let's bring in our expert eye on all these crazy nomination races. Louisa Savage, formerly of McLean's, is events editor with Politico. She joined us from Washington. All right, Louisa, what stood out for you in that Trump speech beside it being maybe slightly more coherent courtesy of the teleprompter?
Well, I think this is Trump at his Trumpiest. I mean, here he was laying out his foreign policy vision, and that vision is, you know, trade is a one-way street and America's losing. All these trade deals are bad deals. He singled out NAFTA as a, quote, disaster. He talked about American foreign policy as a series of disasters. And I really think, Don, this is him setting up for how he'll go after Hillary Clinton in a general election. He'll take her big strength, which is her experience as Secretary of State, and he'll marry it up with this image of Obama's foreign policy as being ineffective. He really talked a lot about him looking weak and ineffectual, humiliated. All these words that will really go to the heart of what Hillary Clinton thinks is her strength. He also talked about the American security umbrella being a raw deal for the United States. He said all these countries, we help them with their security, they don't pay their fair share. And he talked about NATO. So I think a lot here for allies of the United States to pay attention to.
Yeah, I wonder if he's catering to some sort of sense of America having an inferiority complex when it comes to the world stages. Does it work? Was this going to resonate, do you think, with the population?
I think there are a lot of people among Trump's supporters, especially, who feel that something has gone wrong. They feel that they're not moving forward, their incomes aren't rising. And so Trump says that it's because these foreigners are stealing our jobs. So he gives them a very simple explanation. And as we know, that's not necessarily accurate. Trade is more complicated than that. If you look at Canadian and American trade, for example, these are companies that build things together on one side of the border and across the other side of the border. It's not just that Canada sends things to America or vice versa, and one side wins or one side loses. But that's the way Trump portrays it, and that's going to be a big issue in the general election. So I think Canada should brace for that, and they should brace also for NAFTA being a big issue in the general.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like that. He basically wants to tear them all up. I guess the bottom line here is, after last night's five-state sweepstakes, is he really the presumptive nominee? Is that a real legitimate claim now?
I think he's really moving toward that position. It's very, very hard now for anyone to stop him. Certainly he's the only one who can get a majority of delegates ahead of the summer convention. If he doesn't get a majority, even if he's a few dozen short, he can still make the argument to unbound delegates that, look, I'm winning by 60% margins. We used to talk about there being a ceiling on his support of 30-40% of the Republican voters. Well, now he's winning with 60% of the vote. So his claim on being the nominee is growing stronger with each blowout vote. What we're going to look to now is the state of Indiana and the state of California. That's really where he could just basically tie it all up, unless Ted Cruz can win Indiana, which is a conservative state where he has a potential shot at winning.
Well, let's talk about Ted Cruz. He named Carly Fiorina as his running mate this afternoon. Is that a desperation tactic, or might it carry some weight as the nomination process moves along?
Well, I think it's really interesting. Ted Cruz is a guy who's really disliked within his own party, so he's looking for someone else that he can focus attention on. And Carly Fiorina really has been one of the few candidates who's really gotten under Donald Trump's skin. So he might be hoping that she'll do or say something that will provoke Donald Trump into saying something insulting that will alienate a lot of women voters. If you remember his comment about Carly's face, look at that face, how could anyone vote for that face? That was not well received. So maybe they're hoping to bring that side of Donald Trump out. And look, she also has a history in California. She ran for Senate there. She won the Republican nomination. She didn't win the election. And California will be an important state in this election as well.
Fascinating stuff. But we do have to talk about Hillary Clinton. She's getting mighty close to clinching this deal. It almost looks like she's looking beyond Sanders to Trump as her combat rival. How close is she? Is this a done deal from the Democrat side?
Well, again, I think she looks pretty inevitable at this point. It would be incredibly difficult for Bernie Sanders to catch up to her in the delegate count. And she's really pivoting now to trying to unify the party behind her. In her speech last night, she talked about applauding Bernie Sanders for the issues that he's raised in this campaign and underscoring that they agree on more than they disagree on. So I think in order to get him to endorse her, to put his supporters behind her nomination when we get to the convention, she'll have to do something that looks like a win for him, whether it's some plank in her policy platform or some other kind of positioning that will look like he's really had an impact and that his supporters have had a voice, not just in his campaign, but in hers as well.
Fun times south of the border, Louisa. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate this.
Thanks. Thanks, Don.
Well, there was a pipeline summit of sorts yesterday as petroleum industry officials huddled with both the natural resources and environment ministers. After the break, we'll talk about the prospect of pipeline progress with a key official at the meeting. Please stay with us.
One of the fundamental responsibilities of any Canadian Prime Minister, and this goes back centuries to, you know, grain on railroads, to fish and furs, is to get Canadian resources to international markets. But what the Conservatives still refuse to understand is that in order to get our resources to market in the 21st century, we have to be responsible around the environment. We have to respect concerns that communities have, and we have to build partnerships with Indigenous peoples. That's the only way to get our resources built responsibly and sustainably now.
All right, Justin Trudeau pushing back against conservative attacks that said he's not doing enough for pipelines. Well, perhaps the hardest hit sector in the oil patch has been the servicing industry, which desperately needs a pipeline and the resulting expansion to reverse what's become a very steep slide in the size of its workforce. Industry officials met with Natural Resources Minister Jim Carr and Environment Minister Catherine McKenna yesterday. Mark Salkeld was at the table. He is the president of the Petroleum Services Association of Canada, and he joins us from Calgary. Mark, you heard the prime minister. Is he onto something here when he says the conservatives failed to understand things and he's trying a different approach to make it work and maybe he'll be more successful?
I believe that the direction he's going will work. It's a strategy that I think by stepping back a little bit and looking at our regulatory system and then communicating with the provincial leaders and industry is a positive. I feel confident that we're heading in the right direction on this matter, yep.
All right, Mark, you could probably knock me over the feather right now because you're in Calgary in the oil patch and you're saying Justin Trudeau, the Liberal Prime Minister, might be doing it the right way and Harper did it the wrong way. What's different? You were at that meeting yesterday. Is the tone different or is it the process that's different? What are you sensing?
It's a better attitude or a different attitude. We met with the Prime Minister and the Premier back in February and we talked pipelines with them at that point in time, and then the meeting yesterday, having both the energy minister and the environment minister together in the room with myself and a number of our directors was a very positive outcome. And Minister Carr, you know, outlined, you know, their processes and you know, clearly stated that they recognize the concern of industry and the requirement or the need. And Minister McKenna, very good, you know, like this attitude or, I mean, the responsibility that she has towards the environment and looking after Canada as a whole, you know, and then, like I said, coming to meet with industry and hear direct from us was very important and very positive. And, I mean, it was a good conversation and you got a sense that they appreciated the fact that they agree with us. It's the right thing to do. It's just getting Canada to recognize what energy means to all of Canada and get something done and, yeah, get our people back to work.
It's interesting, Mark. You know, we're hearing noise that Northern Gateway might be rerouted slightly to get to Prince Rupert, where